Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking about the why behind money. Today on the show, we're going to talk about how to implement your values into your spending.
So Joel, let's give our listeners some updates on Airbnb. So folks, y'all might remember our Airbnb episode where we talked about, was it episode 3?
I think so.
Yeah, early on. And do you want to go first with sort of where you guys are with the Airstream?
I will, because mine's sadder. So I don't want to cry here.
Slightly shorter story.
I found the perfect Airstream on this awesome website, airstreamclassifieds.com.
Yeah, don't bum people out, man. I don't want our listeners to get all sad.
It was the prettiest thing ever. And it was an Airstream Argosy, which is, the Argosys are the only ones that were painted. Most of the Airstreams you think of are those like metal, glistening, beautiful.
Like stainless steel or aluminum.
Yeah, that look. And they're awesome. But I really like the painted ones, the Argosys that were around from like 1972 to 1978. So I found this awesome one that was about 5 or 6 hours away from where I live. And I was like literally about to hop in the car. I was going to go down there, but I didn't. And so here's
only folks can see your face. You're like, you're torn between like, yeah, you're sad, but you're happy. Like, you're glad you didn't do it in the end.
It's the right move. Right?
Yeah, it's the right move. But I also see the pain in your face.
Yes, so. it's sad because it's something I talked about. It's something I'm really interested in doing. And I still think I will at some point. But here's the reason why I didn't. I ended up having a long phone conversation with my friend David. And he lives probably, 5 or 6 miles away from where I live and rents out almost the exact same kind of trailer in his backyard.
Similar setup, right?
Yeah. So he's been doing it for years now and has like, he's like an Airbnb super host, has all these great reviews. David is single, no kids, and owns his own business. So he's pretty flexible. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him for a good long time about his experience, how it's been for him, and kind of what I could expect if I were to get into this. And he really kind of helped me understand that, especially with something like an Airstream in your backyard versus like a basement apartment or something like that, there's a lot more like handholding and, meeting the people that are staying in your place. Like you actually need to be there for it and you need to introduce yourself to them. And he talked about how essentially the experience was incredibly different if he wasn't able to meet the guest that was staying there.
Right.
And so that they would, once they shook your hand and you got to know a couple details about each other, they treated his place like a palace. But if he wasn't able to be there, people smoked in it. And there's just so many things that can go wrong that you have to pay attention to on a trailer that sits in your backyard a lot more than a part of your house.
Yeah.
And so talking to him and getting all those details, it really helped me think through, you know what? I think with a full-time job, with 2 kids, with a awful podcast that's just terrible that no one likes.
Dude, that poor not poor thing. I don't know, man.
There's just no time in my life to dedicate towards.
In addition, yeah.
And I think, if it was like a basement apartment, we could have maybe set up some systems and figured some things out. But with all the extra attention that something that sits in your backyard requires, not to mention just getting it ready, which I was excited about. And I was also excited about meeting the guests. Yeah. So that was part of the fun.
Talking to folks.
But lots of times check-in is between noon and 3 p.m. or something like that. So it's just tough to make that happen when you have a day job.
Yeah,
so,
you're working 9 to 5.
So for right now, my Airstream dream, putting on hold, but someday I will resurrect it from the ashes like a phoenix, and it will happen.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about how it might be different with it being specifically an Airstream. I guess folks aren't used to staying in an Airstream, and so there's things where they're like, well, how does this work, or where do I put my sheets? I don't know.
Or something that sounds a little like sheets.
Yeah. Do I push this button? Does it disappear?
Exactly.
Does it just end up on the ground outside?
A lot of questions to answer.
Yeah. So I hadn't thought about that, but I guess that is a little bit different than kind of setting up the basement apartment, which is what we're looking at doing. And that was sort of our approach, our angle.
I was going to say, when we first recorded, I was like 90% on the yes side. And I put on the brakes, and you were like, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, man, we weren't sold on it. Like Kate and I, we talked about it some. We had briefly talked through some of the different pros and cons of it, but we hadn't really sat down and thought through the logistics of it, I guess. And I don't know. I mean, the more we did it, the more we realized that we could do that, you know? And so the same things, I guess, that you realized were going to be a problem for you, we realized that that wasn't going to be an issue for us. You know, with me being self-employed, being at home, I've got flexible hours. I'm more than happy to be able to, you know, meet some guests that stop in and show them the place and hand the keys over, you know? So yeah, the more we talked about it, the more we realized that this could very well be something that would work for us. So
your plan has also changed a little bit, because when we first talked about it, you were essentially talking about
doing it by hand and digging it out.
I mean, you were essentially talking about taking your own shovel down underneath the house, clearing out the dirt, making some headspace, because right now there's not a lot of room down there. So how have your plans changed?
Okay, so here's the big reason why that was the case then. Because for the photography that I do, it was off season, which means I had all the time on my hands at that point. And thinking through, I'm like, oh yeah, I found that I don't look more than 3 months ahead sometimes. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have this much time for the rest of my life, right? And it's like, no, that only lasted for like a few weeks before busy season ramped up for me. And I realized that my time is incredibly valuable and I want to spend it with my three girls and my wife and my dog and working on this awful podcast that we have. So it has changed. And after talking about it with Kate, we also realized that a way that we could sort of approach this would be essentially adding on a small section to the back of our house. So instead of sort of excavating out from underneath of our existing house, we would be digging out on the exterior of our home and then sort of building over that where we're going to put a screened-in porch. It's going to be much easier. It's going to make a lot more sense. And it's going to give us a lot more space in the Airbnb as well down there, which is something we were kind of concerned about from the beginning, and that we were able to kind of solve that problem by sort of changing up the plans. So yeah, I don't want to dive into the details any more than this, but essentially we're moving forward, man. We've got, this is a bigger project though, because the scope has kind of gotten bigger. It is going to require some financing. And so I've got that lined up with our credit union here in town. Super low closing costs. I mean, like a few $100, actually. It was really cheap.
Nice.
I mean, we've got a great rate, and we've got we've got our financing locked down, and we're in talks now with an architect, and we are waiting to get those drawings back before we basically get those out to start having builders bid on it. So man, we're pumped. I don't want to say we're like 100% for sure moving forward, but we are like really close. So we got some ballpark figures as well. And yeah, it's going to fall within the range that's going to work for us. And we're going to still be able to get a good ROI with the amount of money that we're going to put into it.
And your house will be worth more. So, I mean,
yeah, it's going to increase the value of our home. And without going into any more details, we're slightly increasing the usability of our house.
Well, I think the one thing that I'm going to miss the most, and I have a dream that's going to die as you partake in this, Matt, and that's you have this hot tub on your back deck right now. And
the hot tub's got to go.
I've actually,
it's going to be gone, man.
I've started a petition in the neighborhood to try to get you to make it a functioning hot tub, because right now it's been, since you bought the house, it's been sitting there not working. And so I've got a petition
you
started.
You are welcome to take the
got
hot
a lot
tub.
Of signatures. And no, I want it to be on your porch and I just want to use it. No,
you fill it up with your water, buddy. And you can be the one out there cleaning it and testing the chemicals and doing all that.
Oh, see, that's what I'm trying to avoid. So no hot tub for me, sadly, and no more hot tub for Matt.
By the way, if anybody out there wants a free hot tub, hit me up. I will give you my address.
At Not Poor Matt on Twitter. Yeah. Holler at him. It's all yours.
Beer time. Let's move on.
I'm so thirsty.
Yeah. Are you really? I am too, man. I'm like really, my mouth is crazy dry.
I'm really thirsty, but
we're going to drink these.
Not for water, for beer. So today we thought we would break open a beer that literally probably every single person listening to this podcast, I don't know, actually, we did get an email from someone in Budapest, and I don't know if they get this beer. So we have a listener in Budapest who's already emailed us about some of the beers he's drinking. And I don't know if you get this beer there, but anybody else who lives in the continental United States, you probably have access to this beer. It is the New Belgium Voodoo Ranger Juicy Haze IPA.
Yeah, so the Voodoo Ranger line, it's essentially a new series. It's like a new line of IPAs that New Belgium rolled out. For a while there, they just had Ranger. But then they took it to, you know, 3.0, and now they've got Voodoo Ranger, and it's a whole new line of awesome IPAs. And this one in particular is a New England style IPA, if you can't tell from the name. Juicy Haze IPA. They've got like all the catchphrases that folks are looking for.
New England style. So hot right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really pumped about this. It's, like you said, the New England style IPA is like a craze, a full-on craze right now. And there's a great article that we'll post in the show notes about these bigger brewers like jumping on board. And so New Belgium, Sam Adams, Sierra Nevada, they've all kind of launched their own IPA in this New England style. And so we'll post a link to that article. It was just interesting to read.
Yeah, it's basically just how it's going mainstream now, right? Yeah. And some folks will be like, oh, time to move on. It's like, now that the big guys are getting behind it, it must suck now. But no, like for us, we just get excited about that because that's value.
Yeah.
You know, once the big guys start getting in there and they're able to perfect their, you know, these recipes and these beers and sort of mass produce them, now everybody gets to have an awesome IPA that's juicy, way easier to drink than some of the traditional IPAs or like the West Coast IPAs for sure that are crazy bitter and have a lot of bite to them. Like guys that don't really like IPAs,
give this one a shot.
You need to start with a New England style juicy haze IPA.
And the great thing is, I mean, well, I don't think they're going to be as good as something like Bissell Brothers or Trillium.
Oh, yeah, no.
The guys that have been doing it for years now and have like just crushed. And we've had some of their beers and they're absolutely fantastic. Or some of the breweries out of Vermont that really kind of started this mm-hmm. craze. But $8 for a six pack?
Yeah. Yeah, like, so I picked this up at, well, in the Southeast we have Kroger, but I'm assuming you can probably get it in a lot of places. But it was on sale, so normally it's $9.99, and they had it for $7.99.
That's amazing, yeah.
$8 for a six-pack, and I don't know if it's because they're trying to get it launched well, you know, just so it gets out there and folks are able to get their hands on it and start tasting it. But that's an incredible price. Yeah, I picked up two six-packs.
Well, going back to episode 8, you know, how to get a deal on craft beer. Like we truly think that some of these, there's some really good nationwide breweries and New Belgium is one of them. And so, yeah, we need to drink this beer right now.
Let's do it.
I'm thirsties.
Yeah. Ooh, look at that pour, man. It's not quite like full on orange juice like some of those ones out of Vermont, but it looks quite orangey.
It's awesome. You can't, like, I'm holding my glass and I can't see my fingers through it, which I really like.
Yeah, that's a good sign. So that's a characteristic of the style is that it's hazy, which means it's unfiltered. So it's got a lot of those particulate floating around in the beer, but it gives it some awesome flavor.
Yeah, I think usually when you filter a beer, you filter some of the taste out at the same time and maybe you give it this certain look and the certain quality that you
certain
want.
Clarity that is traditional.
Yeah. But you're missing out on some of those flavors. And so that's kind of one of the things that the New England style has introduced is, you know, let's not filter our beer and let's kind of see what happens. And it does seem to retain a more concentrated flavor than an IPA that's filtered. That's real nice, man. Goes down easy?
Almost goes down too easy.
Yeah.
Like it's really creamy.
Even most of like the great New England style IPAs retain some of that hop bite. Like you need mm-hmm. like some bite to it. And this is like just fluid juice almost. It's really good. And I can tell that, you know, they did a good job making it, but it misses like an element of what I love about IPAs. It just feels a little light to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like expecting just something a little bit bigger. I kind of like to be socked in the face with something like this. But for $8 a six pack, if you're looking for an introduction to the style, then, I mean, I'd say pick this up because it is really solid.
I think I would drink this, though, over, say, most any other New Belgium beers right now, you know?
Yes, like, I agree, yeah.
Like, if I'm going to pick up a New Belgian or just sort of a daily drinker like that, man, I'm totally going to pick this up. I think it's great.
I agree, and I think, too, like, you and I both just really like this style. So the ability to find somebody making, essentially, you know, something in this vein for $8 a six-pack, yeah, I think I'm willing to take a little bit lesser quality for an $8 six pack because a lot of the people that are putting just tons and tons and tons of hops into these New England style IPAs, they have to charge, you know, $14, $15, $16, you know, for a six pack. And so they're just really prohibitively expensive. So yeah, I agree. I think this one's a worthwhile get. Solid beer. All right, Matt, today the topic, the why behind money. And to me, this is such an important thing to talk about. I think most people don't slow down long enough to think about the question of why behind why they save and why they spend their money. And so their money just becomes allocated randomly to all these different places. And today we're going to focus on how to figure out the why behind your money so that you can prioritize your spending so that it actually reflects what you want out of life.
Yeah, Joel, I'm excited about talking about this one as well. I think talking about the why behind what we're going to do is very important. You know, a lot of what we talk about are the nuts and bolts, the very practical things like how to do this, how to do that. But it's very important to know the why behind almost, you know, pretty much everything that you do. And for some people, I think that comes a little bit easier and they kind of have a mission and they kind of can hit that and run with it. But I think some folks do. It's important to talk through the why and to help people to know how to address that, just like we would help folks think through how to even just like improve their credit score, things like that.
Yeah, I think of the question of the why of money almost like a fundamental. It's almost like shooting free throws over and over and over to get good at it. There's something about this, like repetitively thinking about this and having this kind of in the back of your mind and doing some intentional thought about it over time. Because I just remember when, so the way I grew up with money, my parents, awesome people, they weren't great with money. And so I learned growing up that I wanted to approach money differently, but it kind of led me to being like a tightwad and super mm-hmm. frugal. I didn't know how to use money well. It really took me sitting down and being incredibly thoughtful about what I wanted my life to look like and how money intersected that. And so once I did that, once I sat down and really kind of put out my life goals and saw how to apportion my money to make those things a reality, it really helped clear up my relationship with money. It wasn't like money's this scary thing or money is this thing that I just need to amass like a ridiculous amount of. Mm-hmm. It became this easy way to kind of unify my whole life. Well, these are the things I enjoy and here's how money can kind of is a part of that and it helps me achieve what I ultimately want. And without doing that though, I think I would still be this just ridiculously frugal, not generous person with an awkward attachment to money mm-hmm. as opposed to like a well thought through fruitful attachment to money.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd have more like the Uncle Scrooge kind yeah. of miserly approach to it, right? Where like you have this view of money as being this sort of slippery thing that's just always trying to escape.
And I got to go dive in it every day just to, you know, just be fulfilled.
Yeah. Versus using it like a tool. And that's what we're going to be talking about today is approaching money from the standpoint of the why behind why we save money and sort of the why behind why we spend money. You know, why do we save? We save essentially to become financially independent at some point. Like down the road, we want to be able to retire or to be financially independent to where we have the option to work or to not work and secure ourselves and to be responsible essentially. And you know, in the end, it's not about not living a fulfilling life necessarily, but it's about kind of being responsible and making sure you're kind of taking care of your future self.
I think when it boils down to like, why do I save? I think there's like two real reasons for me. And one reason is I don't want to be worried about money at night. I don't want to not be able to get to sleep because I've got a bill that I can't pay or right. because there's something lingering on the horizon that I know I'm not going to be able to afford. I want a peaceful feeling about money. And so I save because I want to be able to sleep well at night. And I know that that's an issue probably for some of you listeners out there. That is something like, you know what? Yeah, that's a problem I have. And I can't sleep well at night because my money issues are so great. The other reason that I want to save money is ultimately kind of what you were just talking about, Matt, is freedom. I want to be free to make whatever choice I want to make. I want freedom to decide that I want to work less or that I want to work more on exactly what I want to work on.
Yeah, something beer related, possibly.
Maybe some crummy podcast named Poor Not Poor. I don't know. Or to hop.
Yeah, that's like the third hit we've dealt towards Poor Not Poor.
It's self-deprecating night at Poor Not Poor.
It's like, we love you, podcast.
Yeah, we should treat it nicely. Or, you know what, just pack up in a camper or something like that and take 3 months to go around the country with my family. Whatever it is, I want the freedom to be able to make some of those choices. And saving money, being intentional with your money over the long term, you can make choices like that. And I think sometimes starting out day one, that seems impossible. But if you are in this for the long haul and intentional about your savings, that is possible. And that is a worthy thing to be aimed for.
Yeah, having those long-term goals is hugely important. We don't save money because we love money. There's goals and things that we want to do long-term. And that's what fuels us. That gives us the why behind why we save.
So Matt, knowing your why behind money actually makes saving a lot easier, because let's say my ultimate goal is to, in 5 years, take my family on this cross-country road trip. And that's something I'm really interested in doing. Saving money today with that goal in mind, it makes it a heck of a lot easier.
Oh yeah.
If I'm just like—
That's your fuel, right?
If I'm just saving because it's a percentage on a piece of paper, or because it is what, you know, Matt and Joel told me to do, or what a blog post told me to do, the implications for me actually doing that saving are not good. But when I attach actual hopes and dreams to it, then it makes my desire and ability to save grow, because it just grows in importance for me.
Yeah, you're tying that motivation to something tangible and to something real in your life that you actually want to do, other than, you know, besides some percentage or some number that you have written down on a piece of paper, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't love money. The reason why behind saving that we save isn't because we love money. It's because we have these goals that we are pursuing, and that's what fuels us.
And it's a tool to achieve those goals.
Yeah. And so we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about saving, because there's so many different aspects that we could approach it from, but we're going to attempt to leave it and now talk about more of the— actually, I think for a lot of folks, might be considered more the fun aspect of the why behind money, which is spending. So there's obviously you save or you spend. And so we just touched briefly on saving, and hopefully down the road we'll dedicate an entire episode to saving. But yeah, you want to talk about spending now? And basically we're going to talk about why we spend money on what we do.
Yeah. So essentially it comes down to, we want to be intentional to spend our money on things that we truly enjoy. And that ultimately means that you have to prioritize things, because, I mean, I think in a perfect world, a lot of things I would want to do, and I certainly can't do them all today. I can't do them all tomorrow. I might not even be able to get to all of them in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But I have to come out with a list of things that I prioritize. And how you allocate your money should reflect those priorities that you have written down.
Yeah, kind of touching on that, I feel like I'm starting to realize, man, that like, even if I had all the money in the world, which I do not, I don't have all the time in the world. You know, I don't know if that's me, like me kind of getting old, like old man Matt now, but I'm realizing that there's just so much time in the world, and that's kind of becoming maybe the more and more rare resource in my life. And so it's a prioritization, not only from a financial standpoint, but from a time. Again, we're talking about money. We're not going to talk about time today, but it all kind of ties together, you know? Like, you ever have those thoughts?
Oh, yeah. And I think this thought process should take us all through, what do we want our work life to look like too? And like, how much money do we want to make? And I think this is like really, really crucial, really, really important to what we decide to do with our, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 hour a week work lives as well, because it really should. And hopefully, for me at least, it made me decide to do something that I think probably pays a little bit less than other things might, because it's meaningful work. And also, that job allows me the flexibility to do some of these other things that maybe are low cost, but they require time.
And right.
So I get paid less, but you know, I'm able to have more time to dedicate to some of these things that are low cost, but they're high benefit on the joy meter for me. So Matt and I each wrote down three items on our list, and these are things that I've thought about for a long time. And these are there are a lot of things that I could tell you that I prioritize that are like free or close to free. And we touched on it, you know, in an earlier episode. Nerdy board games, super cheap. They take time though, time and friends and community, right? Like, and so to me, stuff like that's really essential. But I particularly wanted to pick out three things that
you spend money on.
Right? I actually spend money on. So yeah, that actually really costs money and not just a few bucks here and there. And those three things for me that spoke the most to me, and that when I spend my money there, I'm like really, really happy to do so, were travel, craft beer, and folk art.
I mean, I feel like craft beer should be on my list too, but it's not.
No, man. I mean, I feel like.
I mean, that's like
you let down the podcast.
You should get another freebie because I mean, craft beer is going to be one of. I mean, should be one of mine as well. I mean, obviously, we love enjoying delicious craft beer, and that's something that we do spend more money on maybe than the typical person out there.
Yeah, I think for me, putting this down on my list gave me the ability to prioritize more of my money towards that. Because I think for a while I was like trying to straddle this line and I was like, well, if I drink Miller High Life four nights a week, I can drink a good craft beer on the weekend. And putting this down in my line item, like, hey, you know what? This is one of those few things that you highly prioritize. This is one of your whys. Like, don't not drink a Voodoo Ranger, you know, on a Tuesday night if that's what you want to do, because you've given yourself the financial ability to do so. Mm-hmm. And so just withholding that from myself was really not reflective of my values. So it was really important for me to write it down and to kind of have that in the forefront of my mind so that when I do go into the craft beer shop every other week, I don't feel bad, yeah, you know, dropping $40 on beer because it is something that I value as a high priority. And real quick, I'll just say the other things. People probably like folk art. What's that? I don't know. Maybe we'll post a picture.
Yeah, I was going to say, most folks know travel. I mean, you know, folks, yeah, can kind of relate to that. But yeah, folk art, why don't you like explain to folks what it is about that you're drawn to?
Man, I'm just obsessed with the colors and the subject matter. And essentially, the definition really of a folk artist is an untrained artist.
That speaks to your heart. The fact that someone can kind of just come in there and kind of do whatever they want. And
it does.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
There's like no rules to it, really. You know, you're not. Now you'll find a little bit of folk art in museums, but there's so much like urban folk art too that really speaks to me that is even completely different than what was traditionally more of a southern thing of folk art, untrained artists. Mm-hmm. Howard Finster being, you know, one of the most recognizable. And we'll, you know, in the show notes, maybe we'll post a link to a couple of guys that I like to follow and I like to buy their pieces. But really just like local art and folk art, I'm just really into it. And so I will not put up like a piece of art from Home Goods in my house or something like that. Like, I just won't buy a piece of art on Amazon. That's,
you don't
like,
want a mass produced no. Sunset.
I mean, I know you've got some Thomas Kincaid in your bedroom, Matt, but
I do not.
I'm just not a fan of it. I need these individualized pieces that speak to me. And
yeah, man.
So Emily and I have prioritized that. And sometimes, you know, these pieces are hundreds and hundreds of dollars, but it's something that we say, you know what, once a year, maybe twice a year, you know, we find a piece of art, and usually it's our anniversary celebration. You know, we get an awesome piece of art, and it's fun to be like, oh, that's what we got year one. That's what we got year two. That's what we got year five. And just to remember, go down, you know, memory road and say, you know, it's a reminder for us of our love and our love of art, and people walk into our house. And I think it's one of the most instantly recognizable things. People are like, oh, you got a lot of weird paintings in here. Yeah. And so that's just kind of fun too, that it's visible in that way too. So
like a raccoon sitting on a dock, chewing on a corn cob.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like the quintessential, like, what's a folk artist? Well, maybe that.
So yeah, but writing those things down, travel, folk art, craft beer, I don't feel bad allocating, you know, large amounts of money to those things. Those are kind of my spending whys, and it's really fun to get to like think about those. So Matt, we talked about my three whys, and you know, one of them's weird. What are yours?
Yeah, Joel, so my three that I've got down are our house, and I wrote down ATL UTD, which is our soccer team, Atlanta United.
Heck yeah.
And bikes, which is kind of like beer for you. It's something you enjoy as well, right?
Yep.
But yeah, so we did a whole episode on bikes, how much joy it brings us, how it satisfies so many different things in our lives. Yeah, from a physical fitness, from a money-saving standpoint, from just a community standpoint, there's so much joy that I get out of being on my bike and getting my daughters on the bike as well and getting out there, so...
And buying a new bike.
Oh, yeah.
You just bought your wife a new bike. You've got a few bikes.
Yeah, they cost money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So
that's why we have to prioritize it, is because, it does cost money. And so it's something that we kind of need to budget for. And it's something that some people don't. And that's fine. Because for them, it's not a priority. But for us, it's a priority. And it's something that we're intentional about.
All right. So when you wrote down house, I completely see this. Like, there's a completely different mindset for you than me about our homes. And so for us, it's more like a line item that I'm trying to lessen the amount that we spend on it.
Right.
But for you, I can see why it's a priority. You work from home. you have a larger family than I do too. And so it makes sense that you prioritize this more, but talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, so you nailed the first one on the head, right? So I work from home, and so I spend like 99% of my time at home. I'm not the kind of guy that needs to get out and kind of get in the coffee shop to be productive and get stuff done. You know, I like brewing my own coffee and staying home and saving money. And I sit up front of our house in the office. You need more space for that.
And for a guy that's working 60 hours a week, you know, maybe a home shouldn't be or isn't as much of a priority.
Yeah, you're barely there. You're traveling like a consultant, man. Like, yeah. Literally, if you're living out of a hotel Monday through Thursday and then you're flying home, it may not and probably shouldn't be a priority for you. But for us, having a, I mean, we're a family of five now plus Stella, but it's something that we are, that is a priority for us. And that's the other thing too, is our family. That's something that Kate and I have, we sat down and we talked about, and for the next 16 to 18 years, we're going to be home a lot. You know, we've got kids, the girls are going to be in school. We're going to be spending a lot of time at home doing the home life kind of thing. Kate loves cooking. She's oftentimes in the kitchen there cooking with the girls, and we're teaching them there sort of in real life situations. We realized it became a priority for us from that standpoint. Not only do I spend a lot of time at home working, not only is it my home office and where I keep my gear, but it's also where we're raising our family, our growing family. And yes, we will be traveling, and we love to travel. You know, it's something that, you know, that you mentioned, and a lot of people resonate with that. I think it'll become more and more a priority as our girls kind of age up.
So two things. You said you're growing family. Do you have some news you want to share with the podcast audience?
I do not.
Okay. All right. And that would have been news to me too. So I was interested. And
it would be news to me, sir.
And you guys are really into hosting neighbors, to having people over too. And that is another reason to prioritize your home, because if that means, you know, you're going out less to restaurants, to entertainment, to movies, all those things, and you're having people over, that's a reason to prioritize kind of your home in that way. I think you obviously, in moderation, you have to be smart about it. But, you know, you guys prioritize a lot of things about having this home that you have. You certainly have to cut back in a lot of other areas. But the fact that you've made this such an important piece of your life, it makes a lot of sense. And I think it reflects what you value in the right ways. So I think one of the things, Matt, that can help people think about this properly, some folks do what they're quote unquote supposed to do, and they follow kind of the pattern that their neighbors or their parents or the people around them set for them. I distinctly remember my dad telling me that when he moved across the country for this job, not too long after college, one of his coworkers told him, you know what, buy a little bit bigger house than you can afford, because you're going to get promotions and you're going to get raises. And, you know, eventually, like, you're going to be in the house of your dreams and you're going to be able to afford it. It's just going to be a little tight for a couple of years. That's essentially what my dad was told. And that's just terrible advice. I think people make decisions based on what a stock quintessential American lifestyle looks like. And they forget to take stock of what they actually want.
Like what's actually important to them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's kind of this mindlessly wandering and taking the default path, as opposed to being incredibly conscious about the choices that you want to make in your life.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, we're not harping against any sort of like one way of life, because in my mind, there's different sort of defaults. There's different sort of stock lifestyles that you can mindlessly sign up for without even realizing it. And whether that's like the sort of mindset of buying all the toys, and for maybe some folks that means like getting an RV and getting a boat and different memberships to different clubs and paying dock fees and, you know, just all this sort of stuff. It's not about one lifestyle over the other. It's just about making a sort of meaningful, intentional decision to focus on the things that are important to you and that you find value and that you find joy in.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think through, how big is my house? Is it located where I want to live? And if I could live somewhere else, where would that be? And what benefit would that bring me if I were to move somewhere else? I've got two cars or one car or whatever. How many cars does our family need? And maybe do we need the cars that are as fancy as they are as currently constructed in our lives? How much am I working? And what am I working for? What am I working for in my daily 9 to 5? And then ultimately, like, what am I working for? What does this money mean? So what am I doing with my days? And then what does that mean for further down the road? I mean, I think you have to take stock of all those things in order to be able to kind of define your why behind money. And one more thing, I think the other default mode is I work for 40 years, I retire at 65. That's the
default sort of like, I work and then I retire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's a good chance I'll be working until 65.
Yeah.
Hopefully doing something I really enjoy and exactly what I want to do though, because I'll have that ability to choose. But I think that 40 years is essentially the most important years of your life.
Those are some prime years, yeah.
And I don't think anybody at the end looks back and says, you know what, I wish I would have worked more. It's usually the things that they missed because they were working too much. And if you prioritize what you do as a reflection of either what you enjoy or you know the results you want to see in the world, and then prioritize your time away from work in a way that reflects your values, I think it's just really easy to get into a workaholic syndrome.
And it's self-perpetuating too. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like the more you do it, the more you kind of get sucked in and then you get more responsibilities kind of heaped upon you and then you feel like you can't quit. And it's sort of this sort of endless treadmill, you know? And I honestly think, and tell me your thoughts on this too, but I feel like it starts early on. I think it starts somewhat with education we're on this sort of education path, right? Like, and you start off kindergarten and you start going, you know, middle school and high school. By the time you're in high school, there's almost no question that like you should be going to college. That's sort of what's being fed to you. And there's good reason. People that go to undergrad, you earn more. It's reflected in the types of jobs that you can get after graduation. However, I don't think that's for everybody. It puts us on this path of not thinking. And when by default, like your next steps are kind of already planned out for you, it's like a muscle. And the more you work that muscle, the better you get at it. The less you work it, the worse you are at making those decisions. And so I feel like I a lot of times you see people that are also then after even undergrad, then going to grad school because it's like, well, that's kind of what I've been doing. And I know that once I do grad school, I can definitely get this. I just don't like the kind of path it puts people on where they're not really thinking for themselves necessarily.
I think there's been like a cultural push to prioritize college and we're pushing people even that know that they're good with their hands or you know, good at mechanical skills or whatever it may be.
Right, yeah.
Who could literally come out of high school and have, you know, a great job working for themselves, working in a mechanic shop or becoming a plumber or whatever it may be. Those can quickly become high-paying jobs in our economy now. And we've pushed people like that into college, burdened them with lots of debt.
Yeah, tons of student loan debt, yeah.
And then essentially told them to go, you know, be a history major when they would have been much better off. They would have spent less time, less opportunity cost, less student loans, and they'd be more fulfilled working a job that they enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've done like a huge disservice to some of our young people by making it sound like that's the only path and kind of missing out on apprenticeships and helping people to see the value in skilled labor as well.
Yeah, or even encouraging them to like think about what they enjoy doing, you know, like so much of this kind of comes down to like your individual self and think through that, like, would I be happy, you know, sort of what you were saying about maybe taking a job that might have a, you know, a lower salary, but might be completely fulfilling. That being said, I don't want to discount going to college, right? Like for a lot of people, that's a great move and a great decision. And especially for people that have thought it through, what we're kind of focusing on is the intentionality and being focused and thinking it through and taking the steps that you know you want to take to further your career. And that's actually somewhere where like having a mission statement, I think, might be very helpful for some folks. This is something that we've had different sort of versions of since Kate and I were married, but like an actual mission statement, whether that be for you as an individual or if you have a family, just kind of talking through some of the values that you have. And it, you know, it kind of sounds kind of crazy to be like, what's my mission statement? Like, what does that mean? But I mean, it can literally be as simple as thinking through your values. Like, what are some things that you want to prioritize in your life? And once you have that, a lot of decisions become easy because it's like it falls under that. And then you say, oh, does this align with our values? Does this align with our mission statement? If so, then it's like, all right, let's see if this makes sense sort of financially.
So I think creating this mission statement is helpful as an individual or as a family, like you said, Matt. And I think it helps you get on the same page with your spouse or significant other too, so that when something does pop up and you're like, oh, do we want to spend our money this way? Do we want to move to another city for a job? Or do we want to purchase this new car or whatever it is? Like, you can go back to this mission statement. It's like this foundational, it's like a pillar of your family that you can go back to and say, wait, no, actually, if we were to make that decision, it doesn't quite reflect our values and what we actually want out of life. We would just be trying to keep up with the Joneses, or we would just be doing what society tells us is valuable, even though ultimately that's not what we want.
Yeah, man, I completely agree. So how, like, so let's take some practical steps then. Like, how would you encourage folks to figure out what it is that they want?
All right. So I would say first, you need to think about it. So sit down, think about it, pen and paper. What brings you the most joy? Those are great things to write down. And I think, like, so, you know what? Spending time with my kids, or playing nerdy board games, playing disc golf, what are, so many of those things are free for me. It's awesome. So really what I'm trying to do is value my time and my time to get to do those things that I love. So what you should do, sit down, write down what brings you the most joy. If you live alone, if this is just you, great. It's a lot easier. if it's with your spouse, you sit down and write these things out and you come together and you talk and you figure out, you know what, where do these things intersect and where do they depart from one another? But ultimately, that list is going to help you as you attempt to write this mission statement and as you attempt to prioritize the things that matter the most to your family in particular.
And this may not be something that, like, you've ever done, right? Like, this, I mean, this isn't like a normal thing that I feel like once you kind of, you know, you get a job and you kind of start falling into the rhythms of life, sitting down and taking the time to do something like this isn't a natural thing. So
it's weird. It's foreign. You're just used to the routine and the daily life. And so you
fall into the rut and you don't really think about these sort of things.
You very rarely take the time to step back and be thoughtful, like, in this way.
And that's what we're trying to fight.
Yeah.
And so that being said, like, you may not have ever really sat down and thought through this. And this might require some brainstorming, you know, like, think through, like, what are the different possibilities that are out there? Because you can do them. Like, it just takes some prioritization. It takes thinking through what is truly important, like, listing them all out, figuring out what it is that you actually want to focus on. And by starting to make that list, you'll quickly be able to figure out what it is that is more important than the others.
Yeah, I think that brainstorming is such an important piece because we tend to think of things in like a box and we can't go outside that box. And like, our life can really only handle up to these certain limits that we've imposed on ourselves. But really, if you think big and brainstorm some of these big possibilities that could happen in your life, like a 6-month trek around Europe, you know, that's a big goal and that's really hard for people to achieve. You can get there if that's something you prioritize. You have to think it up first, and then you have to talk about it, and then you have to prioritize your spending to make that a possibility. But if you don't brainstorm the possibilities, if you're kind of left tabling those hopes and dreams, that's a crummy way to live. You want to be intentional enough to think about them and to put those possibilities out there as a family or as an individual so that you can start working in that direction.
For some folks, that might be a priority. For some folks, that sounds like a nightmare, right? And so there might be the individual who's like, well, no, I just want to have like my boat and I want to be able to go fishing on the weekends. And for that person, if that's what they've identified as like what's important in their life, man, go for it. You know, like that's what's so cool about this is that like we're not trying to say that there's one way you have to do it. We just want you to do whatever it is that you want to do and be proactive about it and to freaking crush it. Like if you want to go and fish every Saturday morning, go for it. Like that's cool. That's awesome.
But think about that. Is it the fishing or is it the lake house? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like which one is your priority? And some people would say, well, I like to fish, so I'm going to get a lake house. Well, that's a lot of upkeep. That's a lot. And maybe that is your priority. Maybe because that's where family gatherings happen and stuff like that. Is it the fishing or is it the lake house? What is it?
And, or is it fishing or is it backpacking across Europe? You know, like there's different things for different folks. And we just want you to be thoughtful about what it is that you're doing and to not sort of fall into these ruts because people around you are doing those things and you think, oh, I guess I should do that as well. That's what we're trying to avoid.
So once you've done this full brainstorm, I would say the next thing you need to do is prioritize. So if you have these big, ambitious, lofty goals, you might not be able to do them all, or you know, some of them might take a lot more time. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, one of our goals as a family at some point, maybe 5-6 years from now, I want to be able to take 3 months and travel around the country in an RV. You know, my kids will be old enough at that point. That's just a memory I want to make with my kids. And there's all sorts of things that I can prioritize, but no, you know, this one's happening way down the line. This one's something that I can accomplish next year. This one's something I can accomplish tomorrow, because I just need to make my schedule reflect my priorities at the same time. Mm-hmm. So prioritize those goals. Know that you might not be able to achieve all of them, and then start kind of put your money where your mouth is as you prioritize those things out. So let's say, Matt, you just did this and you wrote down all these things that you prioritized, and a fancy car and a 3,000 square foot house aren't anywhere in there. But as it turns out, you live in a 3,000 square foot house and you drive a fancy car. What do you do? Because we just said do it. Like, what do you do then?
Yeah, man, you sell them. If you've realized that those are not priorities in your life and you realize that you're sort of in that position, you have control of your life. These aren't things that are sort of there and they're unchangeable. These are things you can change. Start making a plan. And part of that plan might involve, you know, for a lot of folks, might be selling a house or taking some drastic steps. And we're not at all advocating you to like completely upend your life. But the first step towards doing that is thinking through what that might look like. And I think for a lot of folks, that might actually look like selling a house and moving, or maybe some not so extreme examples. It might just mean like, well, maybe that means for us not going out to eat as much. And instead of putting that money towards travel, because that's what we really, truly enjoy and what we value.
Yeah. I mean, I think realign your money allocation to reflect those goals that you've just deemed as the most important things. Some of those things might take some time. Like, for instance, a house. I've got this 3,000 square foot house. I've got a mortgage. I've got all these things. I've got kids. We've got to move. All these things that go along with it. That might be something that takes time, but at least it's on your radar. And at least it's something you can start working towards.
Yeah, it's something that you've thought about and you've addressed, right? It's something that you're not going to be able to solve overnight, but it's something that we want you to be conscious to.
Or I've got a car payment, but you know what? I've only got a year left of it. And once I'm done, I hold on to this for the next 10 years because I was just going to get another lease or another car, whatever it may be.
But not anymore.
Not anymore.
That's your new car.
Because it doesn't reflect what I truly want. Because what I want is more time, or what I want is more travel, whatever it is. Know that you can change those priorities and you can change your spending to reflect those priorities. And when you do, that's the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful place in life. When you can look at your budget, when you can look at that outflow and say, you know what, that really and truly reflects kind of my heart, what I want my life to look like, what I want my family to look like. And I think this is like a pendulum, right? Like there's sometimes like, I feel like I'm in the middle of it, but most of the time I'm like a little left or a little right, and I'm not quite in that sweet spot where I want to be.
Yeah, it's always sort of changing a little bit here and there, right?
Yeah, but if you can think about it like that and be like, you know what, I'm way over here on the left, but you know what, my goal is just to kind of get it a little more in equilibrium, a little closer to the center. And think about it like that pendulum that's swinging. You have the power, though, to kind of put yourself in that position. Sometimes it takes time. Some people are going to have a harder time than others, but you have to start somewhere. You have to start by thinking about it and then doing it. And no one else is going to do it for you. No one else is going to realign your spending to reflect your values. You have to be the main key actor in this. I mean, this is your job and it's your life and you've only got one. And I don't know about you, but living a stock lifestyle, that's not for me. I want my life to reflect those core values that I have more and more every day, every year. And so we're just saying, you know what? Slow down. Stop. Take a look, take a minute. And these are, I think, some actionable points where you can move forward with that.
All right, let's stop and take a look at this beer.
Okay. Mine's all gone.
Yeah. I swear we're not racing, but it sounds like we race sometimes. So, you know, something I love about this beer too, I mean, I guess we kind of touched on this earlier, but this is one of the few six packs that we've had on. I mean, we didn't have an entire six pack, but this is a lot of the beers that we've had.
Or single bottles, harder to find.
Yeah, they come in the format of a 750 bottle.
They might only be available in two or three states even. So some of them that don't distribute very many
seasonal
places.
I think this is something that you'll see on the shelves, I think, year-round, and you'll be able to find pretty much anywhere. Yeah, this is really good, and it's like juice heavy. It's still really, really, really tasty.
Yeah, I think it's the best beer I've had from New Belgium that comes in six packs. Yeah, I really like New Belgium's Lips of Faith series, which that's is
an awesome series.
Yeah, that's their like single bottles. Le Terroir. They got some good ones, so look for those too. But I think this is probably the best release I've had from them that comes out in six packs. This is really tasty. Yeah, I would recommend giving it a shot. So if you find Voodoo Ranger Juicy Haze IPA at your local grocery store or bottle shop.
Not even bottle shop. You can just pick this up at the...
It's crazy.
At your big grocery store.
It's crazy the amount of good beer you can get at your grocery store now. I mean, so many grocery stores, Targets, like there's a lot of grocery chains that are really starting to amp up their craft beer selection.
They know that's what folks are wanting. So
yeah. So it's really cool to see. I mean, I still prefer to go to my bottle shop. I mean, I think, you know, I'd rather be able to talk to the dude about the beer, and I'm kind of weird about that. But if I need something real quick and the closest place to me is the grocery store, man, it's awesome.
This is a good option.
And this is a great option.
All right, Joel, let's do a quick wrap up.
Let's wrap it. All right. So first, the big why behind money, save your money. So in the why behind saving is to eventually have financial freedom, and work is a good thing. But you want to have the option to not work or work less so that you can prioritize your time the way you want to.
Yeah, it's about having options. It's not like we're not advocating saving because we love money.
It's not to accrue the most money humanly possible.
Yeah, we have goals and missions. And part of getting to those goals and those missions and what we spend our money on is spending, right? And so obviously spending has an inverse relationship there with saving. And so we want you to spend your money in ways that are intentional and meaningful and that align with your values in life.
Yeah. And so that means not living a default or stock lifestyle. Everyone else around you has two cars and a 3,000 square foot house. That doesn't mean that's what you need to do. And maybe that's how you want to live, but be thoughtful about it. And so don't just live the lifestyle that your coworkers or friends or your parents have lived. Make sure that your lifestyle is reflective of what you want your life to look like.
And maybe you don't even know what that is. We live in a world that's just so fast, you know, and it's just everything's just happening so quickly. We don't take pause to think through the things that are important to us and the things that we value. And so for a lot of people, including myself, man, this is sort of weird to do, but to sit down and think through like what's important to me, soul searching. But it's important.
Yeah.
it can be like this big ethereal thing, but like really just think through what do you value and what do you find the most enjoyment in? And that's what we want you to pursue. That's what we want you to focus your life around, and even a mission statement, if that's what it takes to kind of create a concise sort of statement that you can refer back to. It makes a lot of life easier when there's decisions that come up. You can refer back to the mission statement.
Yeah. So think about how you're spending. Think about what brings you joy. Prioritize those things that bring you joy and figure out what goals are achievable and the timetable that it might take to reach those, and then do it.
Yeah. Do it. You have control of your life. Like Joel said earlier, you're like the main player in your own life. Nobody else is going to be advocating for you to do the things that you want to do.
Right on. So next time, maybe we'll tackle something a little bit easier.
Yeah. It's really nice when there's like, do these three steps and it'll increase your credit score. Things like that are nice to kind of wrap your head around. This is tough.
It is, but hopefully we've given people something to wrestle with. I mean, it makes me want to go back even and look at my goals and talk with my wife about this stuff again. And I feel like it's something that comes up a lot. And if you like this podcast, we would really appreciate it if you would subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Maybe leave a brief review.
And our home on the web is howtomoney.com. Check it out. We'll have some show notes up there for you. So until next time, man, best friends out.
Best friends out.